are listening to TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barnes Review. I'm talking to you. Now, the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. Today I'm starting a new series. Regular listeners will be aware that I do a bi-weekly show with Dave Gahari of the American Free Press, where we go through the articles. It's every other Friday in that current edition of the American Free Press that comes out on that day. The American Free Press has a sister publication called the Barnes Review, and I've been asked to do interviews with contributors to the current issue. And the current issue is the May-June issue. And if you go to barnesreview.com, you will see it's available there. And if you click the subscribe button, you will see a picture will pop up on that page. And you click that picture and it takes you to a drop-down box where you can pick the sort of subscription that you want. If you go back to the homepage, you can also subscribe for e-newsletters so you can see the sort of material. But essentially what I'm going to be doing is each issue inviting all the contributors to do interviews, and those who choose to do so, we will do interviews on their particular submissions for that issue. So joining me today is Patrick Derek Fox, who's written an excellent article called Himmler versus Hitler on Christianity. So I'm going to bring him up now. Fox, are you with me?
Yes, I am, sir.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the show. And before we go into the article, can you give us a bit of background as to, you know, your bio and how you became involved with the Barnes Review, any other writings you might do, any websites, etc.? I'll hand over to you.
Well, I was an author since I was 14 years old, but I became an active contributor to the Barnes Review this year in January, and wrote under the pseudonyms Robert F. Storm and Patrick Fox Chouinard, and continued to write throughout that period, and also contributed to the American Free Press through the auspices of the Barnes Review as a ad writer. I wrote several 500 to 600 word presentations in the American Free Press under white roots and white heritage. I reviewed the ancient history of the white race and its involvement and its hand on history. This was important to me because white history, which is so important to our Western civilization, has been undermined by the few elites of the world to the point that we have become a dysfunctional culture. A culture without a background, without a history, is not a culture. It becomes first a dysfunctional culture and then a non-existent culture. Culture's very existence depends on the knowledge of its roots, and those roots have been ripped out, so to speak, by that elite, and we no longer have that connection, while others in the world who are non-Western in origin have been repeatedly and rigorously reinforced and replanted those roots for the benefit of this elite so that our race, our people, no longer exist. So I felt it necessary to start writing and establishing a roots for the white race so that the majority of Americans can keep their status as the rulers of this nation and continue on in that respect.
Yes, I mean, it's very interesting what you said about trying to destroy our history, because there was actually a mainstream story out of a tabloid newspaper a month or two ago that I read in the UK, and they're trying to change the education in the UK to say that blacks colonised the UK before whites did. And they said, well, we know it's not true, but it'll help with racism. And this is the sort of garbage that these elites, predominantly Jewish elites, have got in store for us. Why do you think it is that they hate the white race so much that they not only want to seem to destroy us through, you know, immigration and taking control of our governments, financial system and media? What is it that And now, of course, as you say, they're trying to destroy our heritage and our history. Why is it that they're so scared of the white race and they want to destroy us?
Well, first of all, I'm only bringing this up because he is one of the subjects of our discussion tonight, but I'll bring up Hitler in that respect. I'm not necessarily supposed to do it that much, but I will in this respect. In his book, Mein Kampf, Hitler said, if we are to divide the world into creators of the world in four categories, the creators, the bearers, and the sustainers, and the destroyers of culture, then the Aryan represents the first three, and the fourth is represented by the Jew. But I don't think it's as simple as that. I think that the Jewish people have a long history of kind of being a parasite upon culture. Yeah. And their main goal seems to be to uproot the Aryan ideal, the Aryan heritage, the white heritage from the beginning. And I think it's because there's this bit of a jealousy there. If we were to take their version of the Bible at face value and say that the Jews were the historical Israelites, then their failure over and over again, you know, at the hands of Alexander, at the hands of the Roman Empire, at the hands of the Babylonians, over and over again, they have portrayed themselves as the heroes of culture, as the hand of God in every aspect of human life and existence. And we've often seen in human psychology, the ones who cry the loudest that they are, you know, the center of attention, that the world as in essence is geocentric. That's clear evidence that they're not in control, because the more you bark the loudest that you are in control, the little control you actually have. And I think this is evidence from a psychological standpoint that they were a very, deprived people, that they had a great ego as a people, but not a lot of control over their own destiny. So I think the plan was in work at a very early stage to kind of undermine the achievements of the white race. The white race never was a people to openly declare its superiority in the beginning. You know, it wasn't vocal. Even today, I mean, with white shame, we're not a vocal people for our own, you know, we don't tout our own supremacy. That's why the term white supremacy is so ridiculous. We don't tout our own supremacy as a rule. And those who do not fit into the mold of white society. We want to be egalitarian. We want to be universal. That's in our very nature. In a way, that's been our greatest defeat, because the Jew was able to prey on that egalitarianism and that goodwill. And in some respects, maybe we as the white race, we should start to rethink that aspect of our culture and become more cliquish, become more clannish, become more concerned with our own superiority, our own domination, our own well-being, because we seem to have lacked that somewhere down the road. We talk about Himmler versus Hitler on religion. If anything, if Christianity is to survive or even, you know, metamorphose into a new religion of sorts, a new version of Christianity, like an Aryan Christianity, it must come to terms with its present teachings of, you know, disassociation from the race. If Christianity is to continue, it must come to terms with that, and it must view race as central to the religion. In Matthew, a young boy had asked Jesus, you know, Master, what is the greatest commandment of God? And he said, love thy God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And second, love your neighbor. Well, in the original Greek translation, it's not really neighbor that he's talking about. It's race or kin. So this whole idea that, you know, the black family that moves next door is your neighbor. You know, we should worship and idolize him and you know, and treat him as you would treat yourself is really not a correct translation of what Jesus was saying. What he was saying is love your people with all your heart, mind, and soul. Put that first, second only to God himself. And this is probably the very epitome of what the Third Reich represented, contrary to what is believed. Many people have said about Hitler that he was just using Christianity because it was the dominant religion in Germany and he didn't want to lose power. But people don't ever ask, what if? What if there was some other motivation to Hitler? What if he really was a Christian? Well, he maybe isn't in his policies as openly Christian as Vladimir Putin. People always try to compare Putin to Hitler, and let's just say in Putin's defense, Putin is a greater Christian, at least by his works, than Hitler was. But Hitler, as far as a person, had great Christian convictions. He was a great champion of what he considered the Lord's work, which was ridding the world of this Jewish menace, this Jewish cancer, which is eating away at our culture, our mind, our spirit, and has basically gotten us into a position where we now face white genocide. And this white genocide is going to eliminate literally hundreds of millions of men, women, and children and wipe them off the face of the earth, not directly by gassings or shootings or anything direct of that manner, but it's going to eliminate us in a way so criminal that we are not even realizing at this point that it's actually occurring.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting what you say about the Jesus only talked to his own kind. The universalists, the Judeo-Christians, they like to use Galatians to say, oh, everyone was allowed to be grafted in them, but they never look at the opening title, which is greetings to my brethren scattered abroad. And then you see that again in Romans, and basically it's saying it's only to a specific race of people. You know, this is the key here that all these Judeo-Christian churches want to avoid. But I'm going to jump into your article here. And I'm going to read, I'm very interested because obviously the title is Himmler versus Hitler on Christianity. For those of you who have the this copy, it's on page 58. And firstly, let's look at Hitler's speech. So I'll read out a speech of his that you cite in here and quote in here. On April the 12th, 1922, in a speech directed at Count Leckenfeld, who opposed anti-Semitism as an anti-Christian sentiment, Hitler clarified his own moral convictions. My feeling as a Christian points me to my Lord and Saviour as a fighter. It points me to the man who once in loneliness, surrounded by a few followers, recognized these Jews for what they were and summoned men to fight against them, and who, God's truth, was greatest not as a sufferer but as a fighter. In boundless love, as a Christian and as a man, I read through the passage which tells us how the Lord at last rose in his might and seized the scourge to drive out of the temple the brood of vipers and adders. How terrific was his fight against the Jewish poison. Today, after 2,000 years, with deepest emotion, I recognize more profoundly than ever before the fact that it was for this that he had to shed his blood upon the cross. As a Christian, I have no duty to allow myself to be cheated, but I have the duty to be a fighter for truth and justice. And if there is anything that could demonstrate that we are acting rightly, it is the distress that daily grows. For as a Christian, I have also a duty to my own people, and when I look on my people, I see them work and work and toil and labour, and at the end of the week, they have only for their wages wretchedness and misery. When I go out in the morning and see these men standing in their queues and look into their pinched faces, then I believe I would be no Christian, but a very devil if I felt no pity for them, if I did not, as did our Lord 2,000 years ago, turn against those by whom today this poor people is plundered and exposed. And I mean, I've read Mein Kampf as well, and of course he talks about that in his time in Austria, and in his early years he talks about how families will literally the men will go out to work and the women are sometimes waiting outside the factory because they'll just go and drink for 3 days and there'll be no money to feed the children, just so she'll get some money off him then, and the sort of squalor that people were living in at that time. So over to you on that speech, please, Fox.
Yes. One of the things you have to remember is that Hitler, grew up around the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was both his breeding ground for his ideas. For instance, I have mentioned in the article that on the facade of his church was a swastika. A swastika very similar to the one that he used as the Reichsbanner, the flag of the Reich. And so he was also decided at a very early age that he was going to be a priest. The symbolism of the church, the early Roman Catholic Church, appealed to him in a very deep sense. I myself, grew up at one time in the Roman Catholic Church, and I myself could feel what he was speaking of, how we are all one, we're all part of a single mass, doing the same thing, feeling for the same purpose. And I think he got his symbolism, the mass rallies, the chants, the Zeichiel, from the very roots of the Roman Catholic Church. You see that, for instance, like in the Nuremberg rallies, when they hold the standards and march in single column, is very much similar to what you see in the Roman Catholic procession in the beginning of the Mass, when they come down the aisle with the cross and so forth and so on. Also, I mentioned that the beer hall putsch and the annual observance in which they would go down the streets in sights of this revolt, that it was very much similar to the Stations of the Cross in its significance and its symbolism. So I believe that the symbolism of the Third Reich is rooted in Roman Catholicism and later in Christianity. He repeats over and over the significance of Martin Luther. Hitler was neither, in his later years, an open proponent of Catholicism, nor an open proponent of Protestantism. He was very much, in a sense, a German Christian. He believed in the German essence of Christianity, the Aryan essence of Christianity. And from that standpoint, I also mentioned in the article, he wanted very much to maybe universalize Christianity and to have it come back to its roots as a single entity commanded from Germany under German hegemony. We see this possibility, in fact, that he was going to Russia as far as the Eastern Orthodox Church was no longer an issue at the time, because Russia was controlled by the Bolshevik Jews under an atheist state, and Greece was under the command of Germany as far as the 1940s were concerned. And there were reasons for that, and not the reasons given in traditional historical references, but also because, there was some very good legitimate reasons. The English were trying to occupy that area. So invasion was a strategic aim in the war. You know, so many people have often said that Hitler was just trying to conquer the world. Nothing he did was, in that sense, offensive. We know that at the time that Hitler invaded the Soviet Union, he was Stalin had already planned to build up his military and invade Europe. So had Stalin, or had there been no Hitler, had Germany succumbed to communism, as it already was at the rise of Hitler, and Stalin would have invaded most certainly Eastern Europe, then Western Europe, history would have been very different had Hitler not intervened. It probably would have been even worse than it ended up under Eastern Europe under communism. It would have most certainly led to the extermination of at least another 100 million or so Christians, as it did under Stalin and Lenin and basically every communist leader over the past, during the period of 70 years of its reign. So it's clear from a historical standpoint that Soviet communism has been the prime aggressor of the former century, and that Soviet communism was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of millions of Christians. And the exact body count, I think, of as a result of communist aggression reached in the 300s of millions when you include China, Vietnam, Cambodia, so forth and so on. And also another noteworthy indication of communist aggression is South Africa. Nelson Mandela was, contrary to what you hear in the media, was probably one of the most committed communists in African history, if not the world. Winnie Mandela, this great hero of the liberal left, she was responsible for some heinous crimes and tortures. So, this whole idea that Hitler was somehow an anti-Christian, anti-moralist is really a lie of the greatest sort, because, we know by reading the Barnes Review, and I'll go out and say it, the Holocaust is not as it seems. And under the Jew, nothing is as it seems in life or in death. And we must understand that. We're being deceived on a great scale. And we need to wake up and realize that Hitler was the vanguard of our awakening. And we should embrace him both as a Christian and as a person who, I'm not a National Socialist by any means, but I would like to say for once that he could have been a prophet of Christianity. Because even when you read the similarities, and I'm into mythology, I'm into ancient history, and I'm into comparative religions, and when he's in the speech talking about, the few, followers who rose up and fought the Jew and, delivered the message, and who was not necessarily a weakling or just a sufferer, but a fighter. That's almost speaking of himself, because we see in retrospect, great leaders and also great sacrificers for their people often go through the same hero archetype, the same Campbellian struggle that denotes all leaders. And Jesus Christ is a leader of our people. He's our savior. And if anything, maybe Hitler was a savior of the German people and a prophet for all time to look back on, not to endorse or try to recreate his movement in our own modern sense, but at least take his lessons to heart.
Yes, you've raised some great points. I've been making notes on what you've been saying. Just quickly to address you know, the Nelson Mandela issue, when he was the people that used to march with him, all these Jews like Joe Slovo, and it's like, what are these people doing over there? Why are they demanding this end to apartheid? And he continued, I was sent that song that they sing, which is translates as "Kill the Boer," and they really mean all white people in South Africa. And I expected this link I was going to be clicking on would have been him, you know, in some march in the 1960s doing this song. But it was like just before he died. And he's there and he's waving his fist, "Kill the Boer, kill the Boer." You know, this was after he'd left office and been replaced by that Mbeki idiot. And it's just amazing when you see that. And it was all communist. And now you see what's happened to the white race in South Africa. And you look at Zimbabwe and the actual president there, Mugabe, actually said publicly that we need to kill all the white people, and blacks are allowed to go in and seize the farms and kill the people, and there's no international outcry, which goes to show who controls all the international bodies, and it's the Jews. Now, you raised an interesting point about Hitler being a prophet. There's an identity minister who's quite famous, he's passed now, Pastor Richard Butler, and he was probably most well known for being defended by Edgar Steele in a case. Mm-hmm. And I've actually got it was when he mentioned about Hitler being a prophet. This is Pastor Richard Butler said on a sermon that I've got on tape that he believed that Hitler was the reincarnation of John the Baptist. Now, that was his belief. It's not something that we need to discuss, but I thought I'd throw it into the show. And finally, I like what you said about Hitler still served a purpose, because you see, a lot of people say, well, in the end Hitler lost, so he didn't do anything. But I think you're right that if we hadn't have had Hitler, then the Jew Bolsheviks would have moved further westward, and as you say, millions more Christians would have died. But on that note, have you done any research? Because this has always been what people tend to do with Hitler. It's like what people tend to do with most people, they seem to look for the negatives rather than the positives. And so, oh, well, Hitler, he honoured some Jews, made them honorary Aryans in his army, and he did this and he did that. And one of them is obviously he was in alliance with Russia at a certain point, and then he was enemies with Russia. Now, you and I know he was always an enemy of Russia. Well, you just need to read Mein Kampf to see his absolute disgust at communism. Okay, so he was never going to be in alliance with Russia. But why do you think that there were times when they did work together?
Well, it was only from a strategic standpoint. I think that he wanted to basically lull him into a feeling of
a false sense of security.
A false sense of security.
Buying time.
Yes, he wanted to do that because he wanted to buy time to build up his own forces because, you know, as David Irving has shown, that Hitler was very aware of Stalin's aims from the very beginning. The Jew often portrays it as just a prelude to conquest. But his goals were very clear from the beginning. He did believe in Lebensraum. That was stated in Mein Kampf. However, we always have to say, for instance, that was that really his goal upon coming to power? Was that really Hitler's goal once he seized power? Was it really his goal once he was actually Chancellor of Germany? And even though we want to always go back to Mein Kampf, we want to go back to his early speeches, we want to go back to his childhood, whenever we view a leader, we can't consider his statements throughout his career as absolute, as indicative of how he feels at the time when he comes to power. That's important. The Jew loves to take our heroes and always say, oh, but back then, he said this. I mean, how can he be legit because he said that back then? Well, you just take some of my early statements. When I first started my career, my interviews didn't go so well, and I made statements just as every leader has made statements, or any celebrity or any writer, that he later regrets. in my evolution, I went from being rather anti-white, anti-Christian, to being pro-white and pro-Christian. So I made comments, actions, many things which I regret, and I most certainly would assume that Hitler regretted them as well. And there's been many allusions to the fact that maybe perhaps Karl Haushofer had Jewish ancestry, and he's the one who invented this idea of Lebensraum, seizing the living space. And the Jews, for some reason, concentrate on that one little aspect of his German foreign policy and basically expand upon that and make it his whole essence, rather than looking back at the most significant statements that Hitler has made in both Mein Kampf and in speeches that were pro-Christian. We never hear about his Christian faith, the fact that he created the Christian faith movement that was bringing back an Aryan veneer to Christianity and giving it a place within the German belief system. Now, the problem with the Third Reich is so many of his subordinates were anti-Christian right from the beginning. And National Socialism has its roots in the Thule Society and Guido von Liszt, very anti-Christian, pro-pagan movements. And Hitler wasn't actively involved in all those movements. He came in later to the scene and merely used the German Workers' Party, the DAP, or soon to be the NSDAP, and wanted to use it kind of like a laboratory experiment to use his gifts, his God-given talents, as a way to mold this party into a force which could battle the Jew and make his vision of Germany a reality. He wasn't necessarily involved in all the things that Alfred Rosenberg, a very strong anti-Christian, and even Rudolf Hess was more anti-Christian, certainly than Hitler, but I think Rudolf Hess, many of his statements were pro-Christian. We get into the aspect now. We've talked about Hitler and some of his convictions. We need to talk about Himmler. Himmler viewed it as a plague to be wiped out, and he was instrumental in working with Karl Maria Villigut, an ex-psych ward patient who eventually created the Erminist faith, which talked about Balder Christos, their Christ, suffering on the tree of woe, and all this astrological and pagan symbolism and mysticism. He was basically developing a new mystery religion. Himmler often referred to Christ in the Holy Grail, but to him it was an ancient pagan symbol, a receptacle of Aryan blood that was to be used for a new pagan religion. He was all into mysticism and all into paganism, but had little faith in Christianity. Both Himmler and Hitler grew up in the Roman Catholic faith, but Himmler denounced and rejected every aspect of his Roman Catholic upbringing, but Hitler never did. And it's like, for instance, let's go back to the Jews' favorite comparison, Putin and Hitler. Putin never totally rid himself of his Russian Orthodox upbringing, but when he came to power, he made specific actions. And this is something even those of us who are in favor of Hitler, which I would assume that the majority of our listeners are, Putin has done many things which even many white nationalist groups choose not to recognize. I don't want to get into a diatribe on Putin, but I do want to quickly say this. Like Hitler, Putin forwarded a Christian agenda. Hitler forwarded the German Christian movement, and Putin, rightfully so in our own time, has encouraged large white Christian families in Russia by giving them economic incentives to do so, and also by promoting the Orthodox Church as the capstone of the Russian government and society. So all I want to say in Putin's defense, I don't want to get in a diatribe about him, but I do want to say for those listening, and I have to say this, is ask me any government, any white government on earth, which now promotes the expansion of the white Christian family, and even tell me any pro-white groups anywhere in the world today that has successfully done this on large scale through community building or local grassroots movements. I can honestly say none have, but Putin has definitely done this, and Hitler definitely did that. That's why, of all things, he really is a prophet in his comments in Mein Kampf, in his pro-Christian comments. You know, perhaps Richard Butler was right. Hitler really was a prophet, both in his demeanor, in his ability to sacrifice for his own kind. Let's even say that he did kill himself in the bunker with Eva Braun. Let's say that Harry Cooper and others are wrong, that he didn't go to Argentina. If he did kill himself, and that's up for consideration, I'm not gonna pin myself down either way. But if he did commit suicide, let's just say that the Jews want to portray him as a crazy nut who didn't want to face the Nuremberg trials. No, he did that because he knew that as a captive, he would be humiliated, that the movement would be humiliated, that he would be brought down and the greatest disgrace would be brought to him and his people and his followers, and to spare the Aryan race of that humiliation, like another Versailles Treaty that would be beyond comparison, that would be ruled by the communists and basically done terrible things in the name of victory. He wanted to spare everyone that and remain immortal for all time, so his words would carry on, that his speeches would carry on. And is that not the very act of providence and prophets?
Yes, I mean, I agree with all your points, and I've got a few notes here. I mean, firstly, what shall I go? Let's talk about, of course, Hitler invaded Poland initially. This was like the reason for the war. He's gone into Poland. Well, the reason he went in there was he was protecting persecuted Germans that no other countries were prepared to help. It was just set up for him to do that, to protect his people. In the same way, Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine to protect Russians there who were being persecuted. They were even trying to pass a law banning them speaking Russian. And how ridiculous it gets is even this year, and I'm not going off on a tangent here, it just shows how this Jewish system works. We have something in the called the Eurovision Song Contest that a lot of the American listeners probably are unfamiliar with. It's very sort of, you know, cheesy type of pop sort of songs, and I always hated it when I was younger. My mother had to watch it every time it was on once a year. But they've got something in there where you're not allowed to do political songs, and this year's winner was Ukraine, and their singer sung a political song about how awful Stalin and the communists were, trying to tie it to Russia today, you see. And the point is, they're not allowed to sing political songs, but this was allowed through, and surprise, surprise, Ukraine won it. And the votes are always rigged, everyone knows that. So that's just a comparison between Hitler and Putin. You talked about the occultism aspect of how Nazis are portrayed. Well, we just need to look at the Indiana Jones films. They portray all these Nazis as into the occult and all this sort of stuff. And again, this is another Jewish organ of like Hollywood, just out there promoting this garbage. And finally, you said about changing opinions from when you were younger, and I've got something here. It's only a short letter because it's, so I may as well read it all. But I did my book, The Synagogue of Satan, and Tex Miles published it in 2007. He received a letter from Willis Carto, and he sent it on to me. And it says, "Dear Mr. Hitchcock, I've read your..." So this is March the 26th, 2007. It's date stamped from the desk of Willis A. Carter, American Free Press at the top. "Dear Mr. Hitchcock, I've read your excellent Synagogue of Satan and congratulate you on what must have taken you weeks and months to write. A chronological history of the Rothschilds is extremely valuable as well as interesting. The only error in it that I found, although in such a detailed work there are bound to be some errors, is on page 140, where you repeat the Jewish propaganda that Hitler was the son of a Rothschild. Numerous investigations have determined that Hitler was the son of a mother and father whose ancestors had lived in the same area of Austria for many centuries. Interestingly, Hitler was the product of inbreeding, as are so many Jews. Thus, many of his attributes and characteristics were exaggerated, as are many Jewish characteristics due to the same reason. I suggest you read the book by August Kubizek, The Young Hitler I Knew, if you wish to follow up on this line. It is an incredibly interesting book about an incredibly interesting personality. I'm sure that we will wish to purchase some copies in bulk, or at least we'll steer our readers to text Mars for a copy. Again, you have done a great job, and I picked up a lot from it. Thanks again, sincerely, Willis Carter." Now, obviously, the Jewish characteristics side, I don't agree with at all. I don't think he was trying to say that that Hitler was, because he'd already said that, you know, he wasn't this Rothschild descendant, which was propaganda that was spread that I fell for. And I've since denied that. I've had the opportunity to update the Synagogue of Satan in an updated, expanded and uncensored edition. And so I put a lot more information in there, which is pro-Hitler. But if people really want to know about Hitler, the thing that they need to read is Mein Kampf. And I've also got a book of his speeches, and they can be difficult to get. I've got one called Lexus of Tyranny, which is about the biggest. There's a 3 or 4 volume set that you can get, but it's something like $300-$400 for a second-hand copy. It's very, you know, it's hard to get. So if you actually read his speeches, but first off, start with Mein Kampf. And I found the full translation to be very good. And you can also get that in an audio book, which is about 29 hours. So if you don't want to read it, then I actually was listening to the audio book first when I was on a holiday, and I straight away wanted to buy the book and read it. So you were talking about Himmler, and I had Hitler's speech flagged up, I've got Himmler's speech here. You've put under the subheading "The Faith of Himmler." But what of Himmler's faith? Himmler's view of Catholicism and Christianity in general was fully extinguished by adulthood. Himmler's view was summarised in the following speech: "We will have to deal with Christianity in a tougher way than hitherto. We must settle accounts with this Christianity, this greatest of plagues that could have happened to us in our history, which has weakened us in every conflict. If our generation does not do it, then it would, I think, drag on for a long time. We must overcome it within ourselves. Today, at Heydrich's funeral, I intentionally expressed in my oration from the deepest conviction a belief in God, a belief in fate, in the Ancient One, as I called him, that is, the old Germanic word, Walder. We shall once again have to find a new scale of values for our people, the scale of the macrocosm and the microcosm, the starry sky above us and the world in us, the world that we see in the microscope. The essence of these megalomaniacs, these Christians who talk of men ruling this world, must stop and be put back in its proper proportion. Man is nothing special at all. He is an insignificant part of this earth. If a big thunderstorm comes, he can do nothing about it. He cannot even predict it. He has no idea how a fly is constructed, however unpleasant it is a miracle, or how a blossom is constructed. He must once again look with deep reverence into this world. Then he will acquire the right sense of proportion about what is above us, about how we are woven into this cycle. Then, on a different plane, something else must happen. We must once again be rooted in our ancestors and posterity in this eternal chain and eternal sequence. By rooting our people in a deep ideological awareness of ancestors and grandchildren, we must once more persuade them that they must have sons and daughters. We can do a very great deal, but everything that we do must be justifiable vis-a-vis our family, our clan. If we do not secure this moral foundation, which is the deepest and best, because the most natural, we will not be able to overcome Christianity on this plane and create the Germanic Reich, which will be a blessing for the earth. That is our mission as a nation on this earth. For thousands of years it has been the mission of this fair-haired race to rule the earth and again to bring it happiness and culture. So of course he's very opposed to Christianity here, and interestingly, Fox, I'll have to grab it, but I've got Hitler's last will and testament, the note he left when he allegedly killed himself, and in that note he bars Himmler from the party.
Yes, he was at great odds with Himmler over his anti-Christianity and the fact that he wants to make Hitler himself an SS saint, that he wanted to mess with mysticism and all that. And even when Rudolf Hess made his faithful flight over England and became their captive, the most repeated statements by Hitler when he said that Hess was crazy, he said Hess was crazy most certainly because of his astrology, his astrological fanaticism, and his mysticism. And anyone who ever got into mysticism or astrology, Hitler laughed at and called crazy. He was very much against even his archaeological excavations, because Hitler was amazed by Roman and ancient civilization of the Mediterranean and was rather embarrassed that that Germany never obtained the same glories against Hitler, I will say, archaeologically speaking, that Hitler rather missed the point archaeologically, maybe because he wasn't an archaeologist and had no great interest in that as relevant to building faith in Aryan achievement. We have to look at the fact that even though they weren't building great coliseums and buildings like that, the achievements, the cultural achievements and the values and many of the artwork, you compare that to the achievements of ancient Africa. Ancient Africa accomplished basically nothing south of the Sahara or north of South Africa. In fact, even when you think about it, that the South Africans were not black Africans back in the day. They were probably an ancient white civilization, which I won't get into the basis of that because we're not talking about archaeology. However, we do want to say that there's a lot of truth in much of what Himmler was saying as far as faith is concerned, because even Christianity, as it expanded northwards into Northern Europe, it took up some of these strong Northern European values in the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church, because the ones who they converted, who became the priests and the protectors of Christianity, were of Nordic descent and shared those same values. Much of what Himmler was talking about as far as the ancient one and so forth and so on was very much taken up by Christianity in later times as it expanded northward. But we have to look back in the modern sense. Hitler also made some comments about Islam, about the Battle of Tours, about what would happen had it gone the other way, had Islam penetrated at that time into Northern Europe, Northwestern Europe, and that the descendants of that conquest would basically believe in conversion by the sword, much the way ISIS is today. But really, I want to say that Christianity is here and now. If we seize upon the active faith of our people, whether it's right or wrong, whether in recent years, whether in the past 1,000 years it has been pro-white or anti-white, it is a tool, a sword to be used against our enemies. And if we can use a active, dominant faith now in the short term to fight against this anti-white agenda, then we have at least a tool, you know, to start expanding on a new Aryan Christianity, which could work a lot faster than as some of these National Socialists believe that we need to convert the whole white race to Odinism or paganism again, much the way Himmler wants to do. That would take generations to accomplish. It took generations to convert the pagans into Christianity. It would take another 1,000 years to convert them all back. By that 1,000 years, whites will either be an insignificant minority or a non-existent mass or genetic code woven into the mud existence of a mongrel race which would dominate the planet. We don't have time for that, but seizing upon Christianity, it's like even Christ, I do want to say this. Many people have said, well, you know, Alexander, okay, he wouldn't have succumbed to his enemies. He would have fought his enemies. You know, all these great Aryan heroes would have fought their enemies if they captured them and brought them on trial. No, you have to look at it this way. Christ's significance as a leader is the fact that he wouldn't change. It didn't matter how hard they beat him, spat on him, tortured him. The simple fact that he would never recant. He would never turn around and say, oh, you know, I was wrong. I'm not the son of God. You know, all my values, love thy neighbor or love thy race. The Jews are not of my sheep. Why do you think the Jews killed him? They killed him because he represented a force against them. Yet he would never acquiesce. He would never give up. He would never deny what he knew was the truth. And that shows a greatness in character that is greater than just picking up a sword and fighting your enemies. I would go against any Odinist or anti-Christian on that point. It takes a lot more character to face death, a death which is impending upon you, and not flinch, then to react with the sword. And they say, well, it just teaches our people weakness. It just teaches us our ability to let the Jew win and not, you know, be might is right. No, it doesn't. It teaches you that no matter what the Jew can fling at you, never give up the fight. Never let them tell you, oh, I'm ashamed of being white. Oh, our history is really, we really owe our history to blacks and Jews and the Semites. No, to say that we are proud, we are white, and we're not going back into the darkness. We're not going to let our hope go into the darkness, and we're not going to let our bloodline be turned into a darkness of sorts. We stand firm, and it doesn't matter what you do to us. We're not going to let you take our children from us. We're not going to let you take our heritage from us. We're not going to let you take ourselves from the position as being dominant in Western civilization. And we're not going to let you take Western civilization, or for that matter, Christianity from us. And that was really the whole point of Hitler's rise to power in the first place.
Yes, and the last part of your article, we should have just time to go into that because I want to refer to Aryan Christianity that you talked about. But just for the benefit of the listeners, this is from the Lexis of Tyranny book of Adolf Hitler speeches. My political testament, Adolf Hitler, Berlin, April 29th, 1945. And I'll jump forward to what he says about Himmler. Before my death, I expelled the former Reichsfuhrer SS and Minister of the Interior Heinrich Himmler from the party and all offices of state. In his place, I appoint Galtier Karl Hanke as Reichsfuhrer SS and Chief of the German Police, and Galtier Paul Geisler as Reich Minister of the Interior. Goering and Himmler, by their secret negotiations with the enemy, without my knowledge or approval, and by their illegal attempts to seize power in the state, quite apart from their treachery to my person, have brought irreparable shame to the country and the whole people. So that was Hitler's closing words on Himmler and Goering. Now I'm just grabbing the article, and this was the last bit I flagged up. You say here, the most significant idea Hitler grasped was confirmation that Jesus was not a Jew. he wasn't. Mary, his mother, was a Galilean, and the Galileans descended from the Gauls, a Celtic nation. Jesus' mother's husband, Joseph, may have been descended from King David, but Joseph was not Jesus' biological father, God was. This point was mentioned in Houston Stuart Chamberlain's book, Foundations of the 19th Century. But, in any case, Christian identity has identified the Jews as a separate people entirely and maintains that the true Israelite or Adamic stock was pure Nordic stock and that the true Hebrews were Aryans. The evidence for this belief is not something this author wishes to go into here, but many groups have shown that more than likely Jesus was an Aryan Christ. Now, I'm not going to put you on the spot here, Fox, but I believe in identity, and indeed I actually wrote a book called In the Name of Yahweh about it, and I believe that the Israelites of the Bible are the pure white Aryan race, and that Christ was. So it was interesting to see your comment there, so, but I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to push you down and
You can if you wish.
Well, I mean, if you want to give your view on it, that's absolutely fine. But I didn't want to force my belief onto you and expect you to endorse what I said. I appreciate the comments that you made. And just to actually get the term Christian identity out there is useful for people. But we've got about 2 minutes left, so I'll hand over to you to give your response and close out the show.
Well, whatever your beliefs about Christian identity, let's just say that Christ serves one point that we have to remember, that he not only died for our sins, he died to show us the evil of the Jew, to show how determined the Jew is in ridding our people of leaders, of truth, of wisdom, and God's love. And they will continue to do so until we stand up and won't acquiesce the way Christ did. If we don't stand up the way Hitler did, if we don't stand up as God demands us to. And Hitler's belief in Christianity and him doing the Lord's work is pivotal in understanding the current situation like we are facing ourselves. We have to understand that great men like Putin are not the evil demonic beings the Jews say they are, that he is fighting for a free Russia, a free world, and hopefully someday down the line will give us the example, as Hitler did, to do our own, make our own moves towards nationalism again. And we believe that the future is only as great as we make it ourselves. We need to be determined to fight for the Aryan way. And believing in God, believing in our future, and believing in our destiny is the first step.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining me, Fox. It's a wonderful article. You've done a great show. We went in all different directions with this. I urge people to get the current issue of the Barnes Review. Go to barnesreview.com. You will find Fox's article in there. And thank you all for listening. Bye for now. I'll be back with you all soon.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barnes Review. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.